And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme in our second hour is a riddle. What do Social Security, unintended consequences, and toys have to do with one another? The answer is they're all topics my guests are going to discuss on today's show. My first guest writes about one of my favorite topics, unintended consequences. He looks at the interconnection between things and ideas to show how they fit together. We discussed his latest book, The Best Laid Plans. My next guest is an authority on private pensions and Social Security. She was Alan Greenspan's assistant back in 1983 when he worked on the Social Security amendments. We'll discuss the battle for Social Security and hear her almost painless plan for putting the program back on track. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Nancy Altman has over 32-year background in the areas of private pensions and Social Securities. She is currently the chairman of the board for the directors of the Pension Rights Center, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection of beneficiary rights. From 1983 to 1989, Nancy was the faculty of Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, when she also taught courses at the Harvard Law School. Back in 1982, as I mentioned, she was Alan Greenspan's assistant in his position as chairman of the Bipartisan Commission to develop the 1983 Social Security amendments. Nancy has been a legislative assistant to Senator John C. Danforth, a Republican from Missouri, and has also been a tax lawyer with the firm of Covington and Burling. Nancy is a graduate of Radcliffe College and the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Welcome to the show, Nancy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, what a pleasure to have you on here, because Social Security is in the news right now, and there's a lot being bantied back and forth over the fence about this. So let's set the record straight. You believe that there's a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding about Social Security, beginning with when, if ever, Social Security is going to run out of money. So let's start there. Will Social Security run out of money by the year 2037 or earlier?
Social Security actually is set up so that it cannot run out of money. It is based, it is a pension plan. It's actually wage insurance that insures your and my wages against loss in the event of disability, death, or old age. And it is very conservatively financed. It is current funded, which means that most of its financing comes from contributions of workers and matched by their employers. And as long as we have people working, they will be paying in and there will be income to the system. Now, it is true that the actuaries project, as I say, it's a very conservatively managed program, very closely watched, and the every year the trustees of the Social Security Administration issue a report projecting out expenditures and income out 75 years, three-quarters of a century.
Mm-hmm.
And when you project out that far, of course, you're going to sometimes see unintended surpluses, when you talk about unintended consequences, unintended deficits.
Right.
And it does show that after 2037, if Congress were to take no action whatsoever, which is hard to believe given that they've always acted responsibly towards this program, but if they took no action whatsoever, the fund could still pay about 75 cents on every dollar of benefits. But, of course, that's not good enough. It can pay all benefits in full and on time until 2037. After that, if Congress did take no action, it could still pay three-quarters of benefits, but Congress should act to fill in that extra 25 cents on every dollar.
Well, I think that that sounds prudent, and in many ways you're putting my mind at ease, Nancy, so thank you for that. But in reality, we kind of have to go back to the history of Social Security, albeit that it is a very conservative organization. You know, when they set up Social Security, they weren't thinking about people living to be as old as we are today. In fact, if you lived to be 65, that was a ripe old age back when Social Security was first set up. And also, the originators of Social Security had never dreamt or couldn't even conceive of the baby boom that happened pretty much as a result of those guys. But, you know, the baby boom moving through the time cycle, aging and then taking retirement. Just a quick example from my own personal life. My dad's 91, and he's taken Social Security since he was 62. That's almost 30 years. And I guarantee you, because we talked about this just last week, that he has taken out more money than he ever paid into the system. by a long shot. And so you look at the demographics here. You look at the baby boomers. You look at the fact that we are living longer, that these actuarial tables were set up for people to die around 67, 68 years old. And we're living 10, and by the time I get to retire, 15 years beyond that. How can a system like that sustain itself, Nancy?
Actually, as I say, it's a very sound system, and it can sustain itself. And let me give you some background about it. Part of the insurable events, it's insurance. It's not savings. It's an insurance policy, the same way if you buy fire insurance, you have an insurance policy in case your house burns. This is an insurance policy against the loss of your wages. And what are the risks? Well, you can become seriously disabled and not be able to work, and you need insurance against the loss of the wages then. As long as you're dependent on wages, you need insurance. You could die leaving young children, and they are left without a breadwinner. So it insures against that loss and pays survivor benefits. In fact, Social Security is our nation's largest children's program. And it also insures in the fortuitous event, like your father, where you can live to a ripe old age. It guarantees you wage replacement every month for the rest of your life, even whether you might not make it there and then you don't collect, or you make it to 100 and you can outlive your savings, but you can't outlive Social Security. The interesting point is when this program was founded in 1935, I was privileged to know, and one of the people I talk about in my book, The Battle for Social Security, was an actuary who at that time was 21 years old. He started working on Social Security in 1934.
Wow.
The year before the program was even enacted. He worked in the Roosevelt administration to help crunch the numbers. Not only could he project life expectancy the way we have it, he did project them. I've seen his actuarial tables that he did back then. As, remember, I said they project that 75 years, and the program's only 75 years old. They didn't project the baby boom back in 1935, but they sure did starting in 1946, because, as I said, they have these projections every single year. And in 1946 or 1947, they were looking at fertility rates, and that's one of the things they look at, they factor in. And they saw there's this boom. Is it going to last? Yep. 48 it lasted, 49, 50, 52. So by the time Congress last acted in 1983, the baby boom had all been born. There were no more baby boomers being born. The baby boom ended in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
Congress knew that they were coming, and that's why they built up a trust fund reserve of what we currently have is $2.6 trillion reserve that's invested in the safest investment on earth, interest-bearing obligations backed by the full faith and credit of the United States, and showed that and projected at that time that it could pay all benefits until 2057. Now, what happened between then? Well, what happened was that the actuaries made different projections. Disability rates weren't quite what they thought. They changed some of their assumptions and so forth, so that they now are projecting that it can only pay benefits until 2037 in full and then three quarters after that. But one point that's very important to make, there's a real misunderstanding about about life expectancy. If you look at life expectancy from birth, you're factoring in people who die as children.
Right.
And back in 1940, an awful lot of children died from childhood diseases that we now can prevent.
Sure, such as polio, measles, even influenza.
Exactly. So if you look at at those people, but most people who made it to 21 also made it to 65. So once they started working, they generally paid in and made it till 65. And if you look at retirement age from 65, you take everyone who lives to 65 and say, how much longer do you live? Then it was about 12 years, now it's about 17 years. So it's not that it hasn't increased, longevity has increased, but it's not that people only live till 67. That's only if you take into account all the people who died as children. And so, the idea about averages, if you and I and Bill Gates averaged, you and I averaged our incomes, and it came out to one number, and Bill Gates walked into the room, all of a sudden, would we look wealthy, or the average of the three of us would be, in the hundreds of millions of dollars, but you and I wouldn't have changed our wealth. you have to be very careful about averages because they can be misleading.
Averages are very misleading. We're talking to Nancy Altman, everybody. Her book, The Battle for Social Security, From FDR's Vision to Bush's Gamble. And of course, everything that you say makes perfect sense. You know, these investments, the prudent investments that the Social Security Fund is making based on U.S. treasuries, and that might be arguable right now as to the full value of those treasuries. But let me ask you, this is all based on very little or low inflation. What happens in periods of great inflation like we had around the 1978 to 1984 time period? And some are projecting we're going to have that same type of inflation coming up here in a few years. If I paid in a dollar every year that I worked and I'm expecting to get a dollar back, well, if I get a dollar back in those high inflationary periods, I might only buy 25 cents worth of groceries.
You know, the wonderful Social Security is extremely popular and extremely successful because it was so well crafted. And one of the protections that Social Security provides that you cannot get on the private market is that benefits are protected against inflation. And your wages also, if there's growth in wages, then the Social Security is designed to replace the same percentage of wages now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, if you're a middle-income worker, a high-income worker, or a low-income worker. Part of the projections the actuaries make are what do they, and it's hard to project, but what they think inflation will be, what they think how wages will grow, what kind of productivity will we have, and so forth. So that's all factored in. The 1970s were a special case where we had what they called stagflation, where wages went up very fast, and where we were in a recession like we are now with unemployment, so people were not paying in, and yet inflation was still very high. It's unusual economically to have that, but we did have it, and of course could have it again. That's what precipitated the need to amend the amendments when I was working for Alan Greenspan in 1983. And they did a very good job, and the program has that was the last reform, 25 years ago, and it's still going strong and should continue to pay benefits even if Congress weren't to act until 2037. Congress should act, but they should do so separate from all this deficit talk, because Social Security does not and by law cannot contribute to the deficit. It can only pay benefits if it's got the income to pay the cost. That's why it's got that shortfall projected. It has no borrowing authority. It is not allowed to deficit spend. So it should be separate from all the debate over the deficit, but it should be taken up the way it has been historically. Look at the program, look at the benefit levels, decide as a political matter what how the level of benefits, the retirement age, and so forth, and how much and where the revenue should come from to cover the cost. And as I say, it's a very manageable amount. It's 25 cents on a dollar. Just to give you a sense of the size, there was all that fuss in December about extending the Bush tax cuts for the top 2% of the population. In fact, I should say there really wasn't that much fuss. It went through quite rapidly. If instead of extending that, they had simply dedicated that revenue, just the top 2%, those, you know, the wealthiest people in the country, if they dedicated that to Social Security, this year's actuarial trustees report would show Social Security's imbalance for the full 75 years.
Imbalance, if not a surplus. We're talking to Nancy Altman, everybody. Her book, The Battle for Social Security, and we're battling over Social Security. Now, let me just ask you a quick kind of yes or no question, if I can, Nancy.
Sure.
Will retirement age have to be moved up from where it is today, 65, to 70 or possibly even higher for the baby boom generation?
No.
Okay.
If you'd like me to elaborate, I can.
Yeah, please. Give me a little more detail than that.
Most people don't even realize that the retirement age is actually now 66. And under current law, that was one of the changes made back in 83. And it's headed up to 67 under scheduled, under current law. But it should not go any higher than that. The benefits, first of all, Social Security is becoming more important than ever. It's always been incredibly important. It provides half or more of the income to two-thirds of the elderly. A third of the elderly receive Social Security. It's 90% or more of their income. It is also a lifeline. It provides about 70% of the income, provides half or more of the income to, I'm getting the figure wrong, but it's also extremely important for those with disabilities. 70% of them rely on it for half or more of their income. And it is very important as the survivors piece, the children's piece, because they tend to be lower income and those families are very dependent on Social Security. It's the largest source of grandparents' income for raising grandchildren. So it's incredibly important. The benefits are extremely modest. They average about $13,000 a year, which is less than full-time minimum wage work. It is an extremely efficient program. It returns in benefits more than 99 cents of every dollar collected, which is much more efficient than you can find in any kind of private pension or 401k program. So it's modest benefits, very efficient, and there's really no room to cut. And raising the retirement age sounds like a work effort, but because of the way Social Security is structured, 62 is the earliest you can claim benefits. 70, there's no reason to take them after 70 because of the way the formula works. Between 62 and 70, it's actually, there's a band of retirement ages. If you retire at 62, 64, 66, 68, you get what will be over your lifetime a fair benefit, because if you retire later, the actuaries adjust it, so you get more because you've got fewer years that you're receiving it. If you retire at 62, you're receiving it for more years, but you get a smaller dollar amount. So raising the retirement age is a complicated concept, but it essentially, it sounds good, but what it really does is no different mathematically from an across-the-board benefit cut. 6% for every year you raise it.
That's great. We've been talking to Nancy Altman, everybody, author of the book, The Battle for Social Security. Nancy, you have put my mind at ease about a lot of different things there and helped to clarify some of the many misunderstandings that are floating around there about Social Security. If people want to learn more, they want to read in some more detail about what it is you're talking about, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
There are several places. One, actually, I have my own website called thebattleforsocialsecurity.com, and the book is available on Amazon, and what it does is it shows that the kind of battles we're having now have been historically. They were there in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, so you can read a history of very lively history of this program. In addition, I am heading up a coalition called the Strengthen Social Security, Don't Cut It campaign, and we have a website, strengthensocialsecurity.org. And, of course, you can go to government websites. The Social Security Administration has an excellent website, a history section, and it's got those trustees reports that I've been describing and explaining. You don't have to take my word for the fact that it can pay these benefits. It's right there in black and white on the actuaries page of the Social Security Administration website, which is ssa.gov.
All right, that is great, Nancy. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks so much.